our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
I get accused of working out too much, too.
That is something that has never been accused of me, or at least not in the last decade.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Took him as a late-round flyer in the three-way league, but I don't have any problems with people being very down on him right now. Pretty ugly.
That's the league I want to be a part of.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
The three-way league is much different than the three-sport league, though, Chuck. I just don't want it to be with just us three.
Due to my lack of experience, I will not be the commissioner of that league.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 156 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode are Chuck and Eli. Chuck, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful, man. You're surviving the San Francisco slide. You doing all right?
Yeah, I'm, I mentioned on yesterday's podcast that yesterday was the first time in over a week that I was even able to record because this cold has been kicking my ass. It still is. I apologize if you hear me sniffling or coughing. I will do my best to try to keep that at bay, but no guarantees. Unfortunately, yeah, just this thing has just been kicking my ass left and right. But we're back, and I apologize for missing last week and kind of forcing everybody to miss last week. Eli, how you doing?
I'm good. Whoever said hockey players are the tough ones. Maybe podcasters are tough, too.
Yeah. Well, and I still have, including this podcast, I think I still have, like, four more podcasts this week to record. So,
pardon me if I'm a little rusty in the podcast game, because I haven't been podcasting much lately, thanks to having to work about 70-plus hours every week for the past month. So, but it's good to be here.
It's good to have you here. Let's jump right in because we have a limited time kind of crunch today. And let's jump right in and talk about Giancarlo Stanton. It was reported, I believe, on Sunday or Monday that they just all of a sudden decided to activate him off the DL. He is going to be a pinch hitter for now. I wanted to kind of check in on what your guys' thought process for him for the rest of the season and then going into next year is. Eli, what are your thoughts on Giancarlo Stanton?
I'd rather have Ichiro the rest of the way. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I don't know. I hate Stanton. I've always hated him. I mean, I like him, but he's just always been overrated. Yes, the power is fantastic, but he's only had 80 runs once. He's never had 40 homers. He's only had 90 RBIs once. Only one year did he really steal bases. He's never a huge asset in the average department. I mean, I know the potential is massive, but he gets hurt. He doesn't put up consistent numbers. He's never been in a great lineup, so the runs aren't really there. The rest of this year, I mean, you play him when he gets the start, and otherwise you put him on the bench. And in terms of next year, I'm sure the price on the draft will diminish on him because I think at this point a lot of people are getting pretty frustrated with this guy. But if he slides too far, yeah, go grab him because he certainly has the upside, but I'm probably having like outside the top 12 in outfields, like 15 at best for me, probably.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Stanton this year and then going into next year?
Well, this year it looks like, you know, he's just going to pinch hit for a while. By the time he gets back up to speed, if he does get back up to speed, you won't have much use for him yet this year. A lot of my leagues, people dropped him when they thought he was, you know, redraft leagues. So he's actually out there. You know, batting average for me has always been the question with Stanton. You know, you look at his batting average track record, it went since 2012, it's 290, 249, 288, 265. Then this year, 246, which is a little misleading because he basically went 0 for a month this year. So he actually hit pretty well other than that one month. You know, the other thing about him is he's only 26 years old. I am higher on him than Eli is, but I'm starting to question now if he works out too much. You know, the off-season story about, you know, carrying a weight vest up and down the stairs at UCLA stadium all summer. I mean, you're starting to think now maybe he works out too much. I don't know if it's possible or not, but that seems to be the case. I still like the risk reward enough because every time that he's gotten over 120 games in the bigs, he's hit at least 34 home runs. And I think the lineup around him is getting quite a bit better as far as RBI opportunity, even though he's still not scoring runs like we'd like. So I see a lot of what Eli is saying, but I'm quite a bit higher than he is on him going forward.
I get accused of working out too much, too.
That is something that has never been accused of me, or at least not in the last decade. I think I'm closer to Eli than I am to you, Chuck. He is only an asset in like two categories at this point, you know? And I think the average will come up a little bit, but he's no longer, you know, giving us 280, 290 seasons, it appears. And at some point you can't call these injuries fluky. I've been a big proponent that a lot of these injuries are fluky, that I'm not ready to put the injury prone tag on him. I think this season kind of starts to end that debate. And I think his name value will always just be more expensive than what I'm willing to pay for him on draft day. So I think, I saw a early mock draft where he was still going in like the third or fourth round. And that to me is just, I think that's just too much. For a guy who's only an asset and has negative value in, you know, two to three of the roto categories. So for me, I'm probably done with Stanton unless the price drops considerably.
Well, I guess I can see that, but at the same time, I would say, you know, there's only four or five people in the big leagues that I think could have a 60 home run season. And he's one of them if everything's right.
He's never had 40 before. Like, I know what you're saying. He does have that kind of power, but you can't talk about a guy that...
But we're also getting dangerously close to Chris Davis, Chris with a C Davis, Chris Carter type territory if the average drops any more than it already has. Like, the power is great, and I love the power. But, I mean, at what point do we start going, you know... He's only 20 batting points average away from being those guys who are a detriment to your batting average.
I can definitely see everything that you guys are saying because he's shown off a floor with that bad month and with the batting average this year. At the same time, I guess what I'm taking more stock into is that I think there's quite a few outfielders that have taken a step back that you wonder exactly what you're getting from. And I don't see him... I don't see him as less than a fourth, early fourth, mid fourth round kind of value.
And I think that's fair. I think for me, if I still saw a speed potential, if I still thought he was going to steal, you know, 10 bags like he did in 2014, because I mean, that was one of the big pluses okay, this is a guy who has the power potential to hit 50, 60 home runs, but he's also chipping in every category, and that has apparently disappeared.
You know, his RBI rate was quite a bit better this year as well, and I think you guys are discounting a little bit the fact that if Ozuna and their other outfielders, D. Gordon with a full year, I don't think it's beyond the realm that he could have 135 or 140 RBIs.
I don't think it's beyond the realm either, but we have to start at some point looking at what is more likely. And I just don't know if we're ever going to see a 600 plate appearance season again for him.
That's more than fair.
Let's go ahead and move on and talk about Matt Shoemaker. He had a pretty nasty comeback, or hit him in the head, cracked his skull. You have to think he's done for the year. So obviously droppable in redraft leagues. But I wanted to kind of check in with you guys in terms of where you kind of look at him for next season. Is this a guy that you are interested in owning? As far as the ESPN player rater goes, he was a top 25 pitcher this year. I believe he is exactly 25th, top 25 starter. And so what are your thoughts on Matt Shoemaker going into next year, Chuck?
Well, you know, he's had really long stretches of being useful. You know, two of the last 3 years have been pretty good. He is 29 years old. People kind of looked at his rebirth this year as a gimmick because of him throwing the split finger so much. No, but he's been close to 8 strikeouts per 9 or more each of the last 3 seasons. I just feel like there's kind of some limited upside here. So, I mean, I don't think you want to go crazy on him. You know, he might have finished in the top 25 this year, but I would still not be tempted to take him in my top 50. I don't like the team around him very much. I don't like the American League pitcher side of it. And right in the middle of these last 3 years was a pretty big clunker of a year. So, you know, I don't see enough there to have him rated anywhere as close to what his ranking is on the player rater.
And it doesn't appear he did finish in the top 25. I don't know why I thought that. But you're right. He did have an interesting year. I think he kind of found some of the stuff that we've seen from him in years past. Eli, what are your thoughts on Shoemaker going into next season?
Yeah, I like him. I feel like he's more of a guy to target in the AL-only league. Kind of like I feel like this is the kind of guy that goes cheaper than he probably should. He doesn't put up huge numbers. He's not a massive strikeout guy. He's not on a very good team, so the wins aren't likely to be there. But he's a guy that you can put into your third or fourth spot in the rotation for a pretty reasonable price. Pretty reasonable draft spot. So I really like him kind of helping anchor your pitching staff in AL-only league. And I like him in mixed leagues, in deeper leagues. He's a guy that you can just put in there, and you know you're going to get pretty decent numbers, and you don't have to pay a lot to get it.
Yeah, and I think especially this injury, while unfortunate for him, may temper down his value. I think you kind of perfectly nailed it. He's not a guy that is going to carry you in fantasy, in an AL-only, in a deeper mixed league. But he's a guy who's a solid anchor for you in those deeper formats that gives you the ability to get some innings. He already hit 160 innings this year, probably would have gotten up to 180. So I think there's a reasonable expectation he's going to get closer to 200 next year. Offer you decent ratios. His FIP was a little bit lower than his ERA, and a decent amount of strikeouts. I think they did tail off a tad bit towards the end. Let's go ahead and jump into a guy who's quite a bit more exciting, and a guy that I'll be 100% honest, I was not in on at all in any format, and that's Alex Bregman, who started off just absolutely dreadfully when he got first called up to the majors, has been on fire ever since. Eli, what are your thoughts on Alex Bregman rest this year and then going into next season?
Well, it's really encouraging that he quickly turned around that disaster start. And like you said, he's been fantastic. The Astros think really highly of him. He's been batting, second, basically, for last month or so. That's great, because this could be a really special lineup next year with Altuve and Springer. And, this is going to be a guy that could score a lot of runs, hit for a pretty good average, give you a fair amount of pop. I think he's going to be a surefire top 10 third baseman next year. I think there's a lot to like.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Bregman moving to next season?
Well, I have been all in on Bregman. There is no league that I'm in where I do not own Bregman. I was especially excited this year because he went into the year with shortstop eligibility. And as much as Eli's right about the lineup giving, the one thing it takes away is it takes away the shortstop eligibility next year with between Correa and Altuve. Even though he's kind of a middle of the infield guy, he's not going to get to play there. He only has 3 hitless games in the last month. So, I mean, he's been unbelievable. And I think that stretch, he's only hitting 264 because he started 1-for-22. So that may...
I think it was like 1-for-28 or 1-for-32, one or the other.
Yeah, very well could be. I mean, it was 1-for-his first 22, and it might have got worse after that. But, you know, ideally he would eventually get some middle infield eligibility as well. But I'm ultra high on him. I think he's an incredible talent. He's very, very young, and he really came on the scene between last year and this year, and I don't see any reason to temper expectations. He only has 1 steal. I guess, you would think that maybe he would get a little bit more than that with his frame and with his ability to run. Seems like a really good base runner. So I think the sky's the limit. You're going to see him taken awfully early in some drafts next year, I think.
Yeah, I'm, I was out on Bregman for this season, and also in Dynasty formats, and I mean, my rationale was pretty solid. I didn't think there was any way he was getting to the majors this year, because all the reports were that this guy is a shortstop that is probably going to move to second base. And I just looked at that lineup in Houston, and I went, well, Correa's at second, Altuve's at short. Neither of those players are going.
Other way around.
Sorry, thank you. Obviously still sick. So, I mean, but neither of those players are going anywhere in that system. I didn't think that the Astros would be willing to move him to third or the outfield. I thought they would try to build him up and then sell him off for a piece as they were a competing team. But good on the Astros for being willing to just move him off of kind of those two premium positions, put him at third, and letting him go. I've been really surprised with the power output. And obviously, I don't think that this is a guy who is necessarily going to be a 40 home run hitter next season. But I think the power is much better than advertised. You know, on top of the 7 home runs he's hit in the majors, he also hit 20 in the minors this season. I think this guy is a legitimate almost 30 home run hitter at the major league level. And while it sucks a little bit that he isn't going to have middle infield eligibility, middle infield is deeper than we thought it was going to be. Even those of us who were kind of on the bandwagon that it was deeper than the majority of the industry thought it was. I think Eli's right. I think he is a top 10 third baseman next year. I think there is a legitimate reason to think that he is probably a top 5 guy going into next year.
Yeah, I was going to say, just like you, Justin, it'd be cool if he could have shortstop eligibility and middle infield eligibility. But at this point, I think as an owner, I'd rather have him have third base eligibility. I mean, this is not as many good third basemen these days as there are middle infield.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, obviously, ideally, he'd have both. But, you know, I guess if you're going to take one or the other in this day and age, third base is probably a better spot to have him.
I mean, you're obviously going to take Donaldson, Machado, Arenado, and Bryant over him. So, I mean, there's your top four in whatever order you deem appropriate for you. But then I think you have a legitimate argument on who you want next. We'll do a quick would you rather with Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman or Jonathan Villar for next season?
Man, Villar, 105.
I'm going to go Villar just because the speed is so great.
Why is this even a question? I mean, I know it's recent. I'm going to go... I'm going to go Bregman.
You're going to go Bregman? Okay.
It's probably the wrong call, but...
I'm going to go Bregman, too. I guess I own stock in Villar in a lot of places, thanks to you, Justin, one of your best calls of the season, by the way.
Thanks to Mike, one of his best calls of the season, too.
But I still think Bregman's got more upside. Younger.
Yeah. Would you go... Bregman, or I believe Daniel Murphy's losing third base eligibility. So in most leagues. So
what about Kyle Seager?
Yeah, that was the guy I was going next. I think I'm going Bregman. I think Seager's floor is obviously safer.
Yeah, Bregman's in a better lineup, better park.
Mm-hmm.
Although you know the Mariners have a pretty good lineup, but yeah, I just think I'm going to go Bregman there.
I will go Bregman as well. Mikel Franco is kind of an interesting one too.
No, it's not. Franco's poop.
We'll get to Franco here in a little bit. Let's go ahead and move on. Talk about Jared DeGrom. Who
Jared DeGrom? Does he have a brother that we don't know about?
I always do that, don't I? Jacob DeGrom, who is dealing with a soreness in his forearm, likely to miss several starts rest of the way. First, let's talk about 2016. Is he droppable at this point in a redraft league?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
I think he is. I mean, he's missing a couple starts. He's been terrible recently. I mean, I don't think there's enough time in the season for you to think that you couldn't drop him.
Eli, are you dropping Jacob DeGrom or his brother?
Even if he was healthy, what he's looking at 4 or 5 more starts or whatever it is. The fact that he's only going to probably make 2 or 3, and like Chuck said, he hasn't been great lately anyway. You're better off using that roster spot to kind of stream whatever you need down the stretch. Maybe if you need steals, use that spot to just pick up a guy to try to get a steal each day, or stream a couple starters, or maybe speculate on some saves. So there's pretty much no starting pitcher that's not droppable at this point, honestly.
I agree with both of you. Okay, let's look at 2017. Where are you guys kind of valuing him going into next year, Eli?
Top 15 or so.
I mean, really high to me.
I think he's really good. He pitches at a good park. He's on a good team, pretty good team. National League. He's been pretty consistent. I don't know why are you hating on DeGrom?
I love the skills. For me, it's health. I don't believe in his health, and that is, you know, if you're in a 15 team league, or even if you're in a 12 team league, you're talking about potentially your number one or number two starter with a guy that has had multiple health injuries. The reason why we lost track of him kind of as a top tier prospect was because of health issues. This is a guy who hit a pretty big innings jumps last season. He's dealing with forearm soreness right now. Has been dealing with, I believe, elbow or shoulder injuries throughout the year. I'm more tentative to put him towards the back end of the top 25. Chuck, what are your thoughts on DeGrom for next season?
Well, I think it's going to depend a lot on when your draft is and if you get to see some health reports first or not. I mean, if you draft late in spring,
the NFBC. What about if you're doing the NFBC like you do, starting in like January?
There's no way that I'm not taking this kind of gamble in NFBC when you can't pick up pitching on top of it. I mean, I think you're going to see him fall to like in the top 30 range. And one thing that happened is that, because we lost track of him as a top prospect, you know, everyone was talking about Montero and a bunch of other of the kid phenoms in New York when he got called up. I think now people have a tendency to say, boy, did he just get hot for a while? Is this sort of a regression as well? I mean, I think he really proved that he's got a lot of ability and a really good arsenal. But I think until I saw him pitch in the spring, I will have him outside my top 30. I just think I don't want to take these kind of gambles, because pitching can go so bad. And in an NFBC league, when you can't pick anybody up, boy, it leaves a glaring hole if your number two starter is a guy that misses a huge chunk of the season. And I think we're being a little overly optimistic, because a lot of times forearm tightness leads to the dreaded three-letter abbreviation that we don't even want to mention.
And that's why I referenced it right there is – and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he's had a Tommy John before. So
I think he does. I think he has as well.
Man, you guys are fucking scared to death of this guy. I mean, he's been pretty healthy the last couple of years. I know it's, you know, things are a little bit dicey right now, but he's still talking about a guy that's pitched 140 plus innings 3 straight years. He's got a career 2.74 ERA, 1.1 WHIP, more than a strikeout per inning. I think you guys are going to miss out a little bit next year on him if you're got him outside the top 25.
Eli, I wouldn't blame anybody for taking him, because I like him and I see all the upside. I just am a little bit leery about taking guys before. You know, if he's pitching in the spring and his velocity is back and he seems like he's healthy, then I have no problem moving him back inside the top 20. But I want to see some evidence before I get all in again.
Yeah, he had a Tommy John surgery in 2010. So he's outside of that honeymoon stage of Tommy John surgery that we reference a lot. To me, it's unless I see like Chuck said, and I don't tend to do a ton of early drafts, at least not like the NFBC ones that, you know, start like the slow drafts in January. But I do some, you know, earlier drafts that kind of start in February. So if I don't see some good reports, once like pitchers and catchers report, he's got to take a huge hit for me, because Pitching has been so volatile this season that I'm not going to be willing to take the risk on him. Let's go ahead and move on, talk about Kevin Kiermaier, who has been pretty hot this last week. Stole a pair of bases the other day on, I believe it was Monday. He's got 16 stolen bases this season with 8 home runs in only 324 plate appearances. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Kevin Kiermaier rest this season and then moving into next year?
I think Kevin Kiermaier is a good late-round gamble in leagues to take to fill out your outfield. He has some hit tool for sure. You know, if you want to be really optimistic about this year, which he really hasn't had a good year, but his walk rates and his stolen base percentage are both way up. So I don't think it's hopeless. I've always grouped him with another player. He reminds me a lot of Kevin Pillar.
I knew you were going to say that. I completely agree. They're the exact same human being.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like they've got some speed upside, a little bit of power. They could hit for a decent average. They're actually both, I mean, surprisingly enough in Tampa, but they're actually both in pretty good lineups.
Yeah, and they're both so good at defense that they're going to find their way in the order a fair amount of the time.
Exactly. But I don't think people should get overexcited. I don't think you want him as your third outfielder or something crazy like that. I think you want him as a late fourth or an early fifth kind of outfielder.
Eli, you got anything else to add on Kiermaier, or are you just right in line with Chuck?
Pretty much in line. I like him. I usually find a way to get Kiermaier as one of my last outfielders in AL only, because I know the price is never expensive, and he can give you some cheap speed with a little bit of pop, and he's going to find his way in the lineup a fair amount of the time. So I'm really not a fan of him in mixed leagues. And I guess in a mixed league, you can kind of ride the hot hand. But in terms of actually having him on my roster, pretty much AL only, that's it.
I think he's a little bit better than Pillar, but I see what you guys mean in terms of the corollaries there, especially with the defense, and that's a great thing to mention, because I like to say all the time that as fantasy owners, we tend to kind of ignore the defensive impact these players can have, either positively or negatively, that affect the most important, one of the most important stats in fantasy baseball, which is playing time. You know, the one thing I will mention is that since kind of returning to the team in July after being injured, his averages, his skills have dramatically increased. He hit 143 in July, 252 in August, and he's hitting 300 so far in September. He's stealing bases. I think this is a guy that's probably going to be underrated coming into next year. That I think you can get for that cheap price tag in AL only and deeper mix. But we'll, as long as he's healthy, and I can't, you know, see a reason why he wouldn't, I don't think this makes him injury prone, that is going to give back some pretty decent value next season.
I never own a Tampa Bay Ray. This doesn't work out.
Mike's not on the podcast, and he's at a wedding in San Diego, so I doubt he's listening.
I think by now he knows that I'm actually right. It might hurt him to admit it, but he really can't deny it.
All right, let's move on and talk about Justin Verlander, who you know, I'm more interested kind of going into next season. I think this was a pretty nice rebound for him in terms of what we've seen, and kind of validates what we saw last year, and even took another step kind of back towards the old Justin Verlander. But I wanted to kind of see where your guys' thought process is on him going into 2017. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Verlander?
Well, my little number for him here is 209, as in his ERA is 209 after the All-Star break. He struck out 209 batters, and his batting average allowed for the year is 209. So I thought that was an odd little number quirk. I think, you know, he had a 4.07 ERA before the All-Star break, but he's come on exactly when the team needed him. I think he's going to get Cy Young consideration before this season is over.
And he should.
Yeah, and I really think that because a lot of these other guys, you know, Cole Hamels is going through a really bad stretch. You know, Kluber's been pretty blah lately. So,
hey,
you know,
where's my Chris Sale mention? He's definitely in this race.
Hey, remember, I picked him to win the Cy Young when it started, so I hope
the
he
race,
does.
The race that Cy Young voters care about, the playoff race, he's not in.
Yeah, that's quite
too soon. Too soon, Justin.
But I think Justin Verlander is a guy that you're going to have a chance. He's going to have a chance to be undervalued next year. And if you can get him inside the top 15, I'm in a couple of leagues where innings pitched is a category. And that's a way that I think he's underrated because he's an absolute horse. I mean, they lean on him for big innings over and over and over again. He's at 200 innings already. He's, you know, right towards 200 innings. So he's going to be a monster again in the innings pitch category. There's a lot of formats that this is a exceptionally useful pitcher, and I wouldn't even be afraid to have him as a number one on my staff going into next year if need be.
If somehow the Tigers find themselves in the wild card race and back into the playoffs, he's got to be the Cy Young for me. I mean, the strikeout.
That shouldn't matter, man. This isn't the most valuable pitcher award.
It shouldn't matter, but it does. Let's be honest. Like, you know, defense should matter in the MVP discussion, but it doesn't because voters don't vote for that. And I think the voters have gotten better over the last few years, but you have to acknowledge the fact that they still care about pitcher wins. That's why Rick Porcello will be in the conversation. And they care about like what team you're on and what the team is doing as a whole. But I also think it's a good discussion to have in terms of I think he does deserve to be in the discussion. He's been absolutely fantastic, and there's no American League pitcher that is transcendently, you know, far and away so much better than the rest of the field that you can't kind of throw him into that. But like I said, the strikeouts have come back. You know, the home run rate went up a little bit this year, which is a little bit concerning, but I think this is a guy that finally has learned to pitch with a little bit diminished velocity, and that is really shown through this season. So Verlander, for me, I'm going to say he is a top 15 starter next year. Eli, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm right in line with you guys, top 15-ish, definitely. I have him as my ace in the three-sport league for next year. That does worry me a little bit. I kind of wish I had another co-ace. That's what I view Verlander as. Like, he can be your number one, but you better have a really good number two. It's kind of like a co-number one type of situation. You know, you mentioned the diminished velocity. It's not so bad. It's at 93.3, which is the highest it's been since 2013. So it's higher than it's been each of the last 2 years, so that's encouraging. He pitched against the White Sox the other day. He was throwing like 97 late in the game. So, I mean, that's vintage Verlander. It's really great to see.
I didn't realize his velocity had actually bumped back up this year.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot. I do think he learned a little bit how to pitch with diminished velocity, but at the fact that the velocity is maybe coming back a little bit, that's even better. So certainly this is the kind of bounce back that we needed from Verlander. I'm really excited about it next year. I agree, top 15 or so.
The other reason that he could win the Cy Young is that he always pitches in the jerseys that the team wants him to pitch in.
Okay.
that's a huge knock on Chris Sale right there. I don't think you're going to have to pay a huge price for him next season either. I mean, he's got amazing name value, but I think the last couple years, especially with a core injury and everything he went through with that, I think he will probably go outside the top 15.
You think so? Because, I mean, he's going to finish with, like, what, 240 strikeouts or so?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, that's gonna pop off the page. I'm sure that he won't go as high as he used to go, of course, but I do think the price is going up and up and up right now.
It could. Well, so many injuries. I'm looking at the player rater right now for starting pitcher, and there's just been so many injuries that you may actually be right. So many guys that have just completely fallen off the map, too. Let's do a quick would you rather. Would you rather have Justin Verlander next season or Kyle Hendricks?
Verlander, not close.
I'm going to...
And you know how much I love National League pitchers, but...
Yeah, it's the National League thing that's and that offense behind Brian Hendricks that is a little bit... You know, I'm going to go Verlander as well.
I will go Verlander, but, you know, partially because I think the innings are undervalued even in non-innings pitched leagues.
Mm-hmm.
Hendricks is going to be way behind him in innings, like 45, 50 innings pitched behind him. And Madden is kind of known for a quick hook. So I think that hurts him. But I think it's closer than – Hendricks is only 26. We're going to talk about him later. So,
Verlander or Steven Strasburg? That's a pretty deafening silence right there.
I kind of spaced out, to be honest. I wasn't thinking. Strasburg, National League.
Yeah, it's I'm going to go Strasburg too, but I think there's a lot of reasons why you could say Verlander.
I want to see where Strasburg ends up before I make that
Well, he signed an extension.
Oh, okay. So. Well, then, if he's in for Washington, I still think you have to take him. But in leagues where, like, the draft and hold I'm in, it's a lot scarier because Verlander has had a lot of problems, but he's still pitched a lot all the time. Strasburg,
the injury issues with Strasburg is the reason it's a lot closer than it probably should be.
Agreed.
Verlander or Johnny Cueto?
Verlander, not remotely close.
Okay.
Verlander, but, you know, Cueto is pitching one of the better parks to be pitching in. But
Verlander or Noah Syndergaard?
Syndergaard.
It's Syndergaard for me, too, but, the silence is deafening in that regard.
I'd take Verlander. I'm a little concerned about the lack of track record for Syndergaard and the velocity drops and the little things that have happened this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, last one, Verlander or let's do John Lester.
Lester for me.
It's brilliant, man. That's about as close as it gets. I'll go Lester.
I'm going to go Verlander.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Yeah, I mean, he's already got 45 more strikeouts. That to me is huge. Let's go ahead and move on. We'll move on and talk about Steven Souza, who's been ice cold as of late. I want to know, droppable in 15-team leagues right now, and then moving on to next year, will he ever rebound what we thought we were going to see from him, Chuck?
I have a tendency to still believe. I don't know exactly why. Just because... I mean, he fits the profile so well. I mean, he's a really incredible athlete for a 6'4", you know, 240 kind of guy. You know, he's shown signs in different stretches, but he's also been injury prone. He's had a very unique professional career. He found Jesus just in time to save his career. He was basically out of baseball and then came back, and that's what has made him such an older prospect. So there's a lot going on here. I think he's in the right spot to have a long leash because I don't think Tampa Bay is going to give up on him. I don't think they're going to spend and fill him in with free agents. I'm going to like him as a late-round flyer. I took him as a late-round flyer in the three-way league. But I don't have any problems with people being very down on him right now. Pretty ugly.
The three-way league is much different than the three-sport league, though, Chuck.
That's a league I want to be a part of.
I just don't want it to be with just us three.
Yeah.
There's going to be a serious man pack before the three-way league.
Due to my lack of experience, I will not be the commissioner of that league.
For me, looking at the strikeout rates the last 2 years, he hasn't been quite that bad in the minor leagues, at least in the larger samples, but having a 35% strikeout rate this year, almost 34% strikeout rate last year, I just wonder if he's ever going to make enough contact. I think you're right that the Rays will give him every opportunity. The Rays are going to suck next season. And shit, how many years have they run out Desmond Jennings before they finally cut bait on him? So the power-speed combination is really tantalizing, and that will always kind of keep me somewhat in, especially if the price is low. But I do worry that he's just not going to make enough contact to be a guy that is ever going to deliver on the promise that we kind of saw last season. Eli, what are your thoughts on Souza?
Didn't I really say that the Tampa Bay Rays are disappointing and don't own them? I mean, this is, like you said,
that's why I put him back to back.
Yeah, he's got 148 Ks in 108 games. He's a lifetime 227 hitter with a 300 OBP. He's got a slugging under 400. He's got 18 career steals and 12 career caught stealing. He's not a good base runner. He doesn't have elite speed. He's only got 31 homers in 239 games. So, yeah, at times he shows his power, but it really hasn't manifested. Like you said, he can't make contact. He's not a good base runner. Guy stinks. Like, I understand that the power speed, he's got that in his repertoire, but he can't hit for the average to make it work. And at this point, he hasn't done it. So it's just, he's 27. Like, it's just not going to happen, man.
Yeah, and he doesn't walk, or at least he's not walking enough this year that the OBP will at least save you if you're in an OBP format. At least last season, he was walking over 10% of the time. This year, at 6%, you can't. There's no format in which that's viable.
Especially for a guy who has 4 home runs since June.
Yeah.
Yeah, if everything went right for this guy, he's still a liability in average. He's still going to be a liability in runs. He'll be, what, okay in homers and maybe steals if he got lucky? Like, that lineup stinks. So he's never, even if he does start hitting some homers, he's not going to be huge in RBI. So screw this guy.
All right. I think that's very fair. So he is out of the threesome league.
we can do better. There are better looking guys out there.
Well, let's talk about another one. Mikel Franco, who I would have totally signed up for in a 3-way league earlier this year. He has been god awful as of late. You gotta start wondering if he, you know, the hype on him just went crazy because of spring training. I bought in. I always call that the Mike Moustakas effect. After what Mike Moustakas did a few years ago in spring training and then fell flat on his face. Is this guy ever going to be the 30 home run hitter with a decent average that we thought, Eli?
I don't think so. I think he's fine. I like you said, I think we got overhyped on him because of what he did in spring training and what he did to finish out last year. He's a good player, but I don't think he's ever going to be a great average guy, and the Phillies lineup is getting better moving forward, but it's not all that special. So, and he doesn't walk, so the runs aren't going to be there for a while. The average is never going to be great. He's not going to run. So I think we're looking at like a really poor man's Evan Longoria, which, you know, this got value, but it's just not going to be the kind of special player that some people forecasted him to be. So temper your expectations. He's still got value, but just don't go crazy relying on him to be your third baseman of the future for the next 5 years, because he's got limitations.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Franco?
I'm more optimistic than Eli is. Maybe it was misreported to me, but I thought as a prospect that people thought the power was going to be the question and that he was going to bat for a higher average than he has this year. I feel like maybe he's selling himself out a little bit to hit for power. And that could be why he's only batting .246. He does have 73 RBIs on a pretty bad team. I also think I'm probably putting too much stock in this, but he's just 24 years old. I think he's kind of searching for himself at the major league level. You know, if I got into a spot where, you know, I needed to hold off on a position and take a starter kind of late, I would not be afraid to have Franco at all. I'm not sure Eli's saying that either. He's just saying that, you know, he's probably not going to be the superstar that we hoped he was going to be after how he performed the second half of last year. But I'm not giving up on Franco. If somebody told me that, you know, I was strong in other areas and that I had Franco as my third baseman for the next 5 years with him only, he just turned 24 like last week. I think there's still quite a bit to be drawn out of this.
He is getting Babbitt to death a little bit.
I was just about to say.
So this 246 is not. He's deserved like a 275 average. He's not striking out at a crazy rate or anything. So I think that's encouraging. I just don't think he's going to be. I just think he's a poor man's Longoria. Like I said, like that certainly has value, and I'll take him on my team. But I don't think he's going to be anything more than that necessarily.
I think he could be. I was about to say that the BABIP to me, a 258 BABIP is absolutely atrocious, especially for a guy who probably should be much closer to like a 280 BABIP. So you could bring up maybe to like a 260 average. He's doing a lot of the things that I want to see in terms of pulling the ball, hard contact, and then his home run to fly ball rate. I think he's just been a little bit unlucky this season, especially in the BABIP department. I think if he could get maybe his launch angle up a little bit, I think this is a guy that could break out. Maybe he's not a perennial 30 home run guy, but I think he is pretty close. And I think the price is going to be so depressed because of the depth at third base that we are going to be talking about him as a guy who's probably going outside of the top 15 at third base next year.
I think we're discounting the fact that he's buoyed in the middle of that lineup. Mm-hmm. Like if he was a Blue Jay, he'd bat eighth or ninth, but as a Philly, he's going to bat fourth. Now, if that lineup's going to get any better around him is debatable. It depends on, J.P. Crawford and other variables, Aaron Altherr maybe. But the point is that he's going to be in a really good spot to produce numbers that if he was on a different team, maybe he wouldn't be in that good of a spot. I think that helps him in over the next 2-3 years as well.
I completely agree with you. Let's move on, talk about Gerrit Cole. Who is reportedly going to be coming back off of the DL here shortly. I believe they're looking at him making a September 12th start.
Against Michael Franco.
There we go. I want to hear you guys' thoughts, though, on Cole for next season. I was pretty high on him coming into this year, actually coming into the last 2 years. He delivered last season. It's been up and down this year. Is this guy still an elite starter for you going forward, Eli?
Man, that's a tough one. I don't know. This is really strange, man. Like, why are the strikeouts down 1.2 per nine? Why are the walks up 0.6? He's definitely been getting BABIP to death a little bit. So the 3.55 ERA is a little misleading. It should probably be closer to 3. So I think that's encouraging. I just think he's too talented. He had too good of a year last year at the age of 24 that we're going to see a pretty solid bounce back next year. And if the price diminishes too much, I'm going to be all over this guy. I could see having him in just about every league I'm in. I think the floor is pretty safe. Even though this year was a little bit of a disaster, he still hasn't killed you. So I'm definitely encouraged. I'm thinking top 20-ish.
Yeah, he's at least top 20 for me. Yeah. I completely believe in what we saw last season. The fact that he's coming back with the elbow as Pittsburgh is pretty much starting to, flail a little bit, to me, kind of seems like Pittsburgh is really careful with their starters. If this was something they were afraid of, could be a long-term injury, they'd be shutting him down right now. So for me, I think this is a good sign that he's going to make his way back to the rotation. I think he could be undervalued next year, and with the way starting pitching was this year, I think he's a good guy to be a number two starter for you, and you pair with another stud, and he can produce like a number one. So I'm all in on Gerrit Cole next season. Chuck, what are your thoughts on Cole?
I feel like for a lot of his professional career, something has just always managed to be a little bit off. He did have a really, really good year last year, but throughout the minors, like the numbers never equaled the stuff. Then all of a sudden he comes up and he shows all this promise and we're saying he's going to grow into a stud. And the 2 years, the year that he started to grow and the year that he was a stud, he lost the one game play-in for them as their ace starter. Now this year we've had this up and down. There's something about his mentality, his presence on the mound. I'm not a Garrett Cole guy, and I talked my wife out of us keeping Garrett Cole in two separate leagues this year. There's just stuff I didn't like about him. So I'm not going to blame anybody for taking him where you guys want to take him. But he's not close to the top 20 for me. I'd rather have Chris Archer next year. I'd rather have a lot of people that I think are going to end up in his range. So I think he's somebody who's not going to end up on my teams.
I got to say, I'm pretty jealous. Just the fact that Chuck is having conversations with a woman about whether to keep Garrett Cole on the roster, that's like my dream in life.
Yeah, I can't even get my wife to play fantasy baseball. She dominates in fantasy football. She's one of our league champs. But she can't get her to do fantasy baseball yet. Let's talk real quick. I know, Chuck, you got to take off, so maybe Eli and I can finish up the last few guys. But I just want to talk real quick about Yasmani Grandal and kind of see where your guys' thoughts on him are going into 2017. He started off pretty dreadful this year. I mean, he had a decent kind of early start, but then through May and June, didn't bat above 200. Has really come on in the second half. What are your guys' thoughts on Grandal? I'll start with you, Chuck.
Well, I'm wondering right now, going forward, if the AJ Ellis trade, and I believe Ruiz is a free agent, I'm wondering if the AJ Ellis trade means that he's going to play more next year. Because, you know, we talked about him maybe a month ago, and the fact that he wasn't building up at bats like a primary catcher usually does was really hurting him. I mean, you know, he's got 24 home runs. I mean, that's valuable at catcher any way you look at it, and I don't mean to paint it other than that. But as far as sneaking him into like the top six or seven, you know, or how early you could take him, I think the amount of at-bats he gets is really important. I also think the Dodgers have really surprised me with how good their offense has been this year, how much they've gotten out of their young hitters, etc. So I think if his at-bats go up, I think he can be a major value at catcher next year.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Grandal?
Yeah, I love him. I certainly got more value in an OBP league, but he gets on base. He's going to score more. I think he's got unlucky with the run scored. I don't know how he's only got 43 runs with 24 homers and a lot of walks, so I think the runs will go.
He's batting on. I mean, he's been batting at the bottom of that.
Well, yeah, I know that's certain. And that's certainly part of it. I do think though, with all these homers and all these walks, that he's going to get more runs next year. I think he's gotten a little unlucky in that department. So, like Chuck said, I mean, the guy's going to hit 30 homers at catcher. I mean, I don't care if he hits 230. That's fine. Like, whatever. Like, not many catchers are hitting for average anyway. So, you can capitalize on these homers, and I think he's going to get more playing time next year. I'm drafting him probably right around the top five at catcher.
Wow, top five at catcher?
I mean, who would you rather have? Like, I guess, obviously, Posey, Wilson Ramos,
Real Muto.
What about Contreras and Sanchez?
Yeah, I think that's... I'm not going to have them as high, but Evan Gattis, a guy who...
I'd rather have Grandal.
He's going to have catcher eligibility, but be playing full-time because of his ability to play DH. Or a first base, DH, wherever they have him. I think I'm going to have Gattis. I think there's an argument for Sal Perez and Russell Martin, but I could understand going either way. I think he's firmly in my top 10.
How generous of you.
There's a huge fall off after him.
I just don't see how you can take him after. Seven. I could see how you could have him outside your top five for sure, but I don't see how you could have him past seven.
I'm a Russell Martin guy. I think I'd have him above Sal Perez. I think I'd have him above the two rookies. So yeah, probably six or seven. I think that's fair.
I think he's a guy where, I mean, we don't talk about this much, but there's a huge difference between a two catcher league and a one catcher league for a guy like this, because in a one-catcher league or what have you, there's going to be some quality catcher that comes out of the woodwork next year that's decent, and I think that would depress his value. In a two-catcher league where you've got to have two catchers in there all the time, I think his value would go up quite a bit.
Especially if you're in, like, a two-catcher NL only. Then he's got a huge value. So, I can see the argument of having him in the top five. he's probably not going to be in my top five, but maybe that's a little bit of a Giants fan bias. Chuck, well, go ahead.
I was just saying that we're kind of discounting a pretty long injury history at this point with Grandal as well. I mean, you know, he had the broken ankle and the concussion issues last year, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not that, you know, like I said, not if you're only going to draft one catcher or what have you, or, you know, there's going to be stuff on the wire, then to me, that plays more of a factor. Whereas in a two catcher league where everyone's going to be scrambling for catchers, because Lord knows there's not 30 good catchers in the bigs right now.
No, there's barely 10.
Yeah, exactly. So then I think his value gets raised.
And I think the one thing too that we haven't mentioned is he's a really good defensive catcher in terms of his framing and things like that. He's always regarded as one of the best framers in baseball. So, you know, he will get plenty of time behind the plate as long as he is healthy, because he is so good to that, so good for the pitching staff in LA. Chuck, I know you got to take off. Why don't you give yourself a little plug about where people can reach you on Twitter?
I am always reachable at Just Chucking It on Twitter. It's been a lot of fun. I'm glad we got together again, and I'm glad that Eli could escape his job for a couple minutes, and I'm glad that Justin is above ground yet with us. And you know, I'll just try to remove the fact that we had any conversations about three ways, and I will hopefully talk to all of you people next week as well.
Definitely. Good talking to you, Chuck, and we will definitely be back next week. Eli and I are going to kind of continue on. I just want to kind of touch on the last three players. First is Vincent Velasquez. What are your thoughts on him going into next season now that he is pretty much done for this year?
I really like him. I know he had his ups and downs, but that's going to happen with a 24-year-old pitcher. I mean, come on. Give the guy a break. Give him some time to adjust and figure things out. I mean, he did have 152 strikeouts in 131 innings. The walks were fairly limited. I like that. I think he's going to be a high upside kind of guy next year. And I think since he's kind of been, for the most part, irrelevant the last 2 months, 3 months after an incredibly strong start, I think the price is going to be a little depressed and people are going to kind of forget about the potential that he has. So I'm going to be all over my NL-only leagues, although I don't play any NL-only leagues, so never mind about that. But yeah, I'm going to try to get him on a bunch of my teams for a high upside guy. I don't think he's going to – he might hurt your whip a little bit, but I think he's pretty solid and he's not going to hurt you in many places.
Yeah, since July, he has not had a start with less than 5 strikeouts. So, I mean, even though he hasn't been quite as good and the homers have been a problem as of late, I think a lot of that can be blamed on fatigue and the park. He's still striking people out. He isn't walking people at an obscene rate. I mean,
yeah. And 6 walks and 38 Ks in his last 5 starts to close the season. Yeah. Now, some of those starts were a disaster, but at least he struck people out and limited the walks.
Mm-hmm. And this could be a matter of, you know, he's getting tired. He's a young guy. I think he could probably use a little bit of weight on his frame. I know he's listed at like 6'3", 205, but
I would kill that way that much. Shit.
I'd kill to be that tall. How tall am I?
Yeah.
I'm 5'10".
There's nothing to be ashamed about. If you said like 5'8 or lower, then I'd probably make fun of you.
Yeah, no, I'm built like a tank though. I'm 5'10", 255.
You got that Mike Allstott frame.
Yeah, exactly. I was meant to be a middle linebacker, not a baseball player for sure. But I love Velasquez. I think the end of the year struggles will scare a ton of people, and I think there will be a little bit of a discount. And I like the fact that we got a ton of strikeouts from the kid. He seemed consistent with the strikeout. The control issues. The homer issues, I think, will calm down at some point. I'm not as worried about that moving on into next season. So let's go ahead and talk about Logan Forsythe. who had kind of a lost beginning of the season, but has really rebounded as of late. I know you hate Tampa Bay Rays, but this is a guy who is sneakily going to put up a 20 home run season with pretty good rate stats at the second base position. What are your thoughts on Forsyth for next season?
Yeah, this is one of the exceptions. I really like this guy. He always gets underappreciated because, you know how it is. When you have a guy that doesn't steal a ton of bags or hit a ton of homers, people just don't think about him. But like you said, good rate stats. He's going to hit for a solid average. He's going to give you enough power at the second base position that you're going to be plenty pleased. He's going to hit atop the order. I know the lineup isn't very good, but he'll still score a fair amount of runs, chip in, 5 to 10 steals as well. So I really like him. I think he's really solid. I also love him in DFS against lefties. The guy just matches lefties. So he's a guy that I really like. I'm sure I'll have him at second base in a couple different AL-onlys because the price is never it's always fair. It's always reasonable, and especially with all this missed time that he had. So I think I'm going to have him in a lot of places next year.
Yeah, I do too because, especially in your deeper formats, people aren't looking at him. I'm pretty sure I took him in 3-sport in that 14-team league to fill in my second base, especially because I kind of punted baseball quite a bit. And I was pretty happy to get him. He's got a .352 on base percentage this year, which is fantastic. I love the fact that in spite of the fact that he's not going to get to 600 plate appearances, he's going to have over 20 home runs this season and still chipped in a little bit with his speed, 6 stolen bases already. I think this is an underrated guy that in your deeper formats you can wait on quite a bit like you could this year. I mean, you were able to wait on him quite a bit. I know the early season returns scared a bunch of people off, and I'm sure he was dropped in a number of leagues. But I think moving on next year, I think you're going to get a similar or even better discount than last year, which is insane because he's in over 100 less or 150 less plate appearances already. He's outperformed last season for the most part.
I know this is a random question, and this is me just trying to cheat to get your opinion on a different player. Who would you rather have at middle infield next year, Logan Forsyth or Tim Anderson?
I think it's team construct. And I also think format plays a big role because in an OBP format, I think I've got to go with Forsyth.
Of course. Yeah, just a standard.
In standard, I think
is it simple? Like if you need steals, you go Anderson. Although, Anderson only has 8 steals this year in about half a season in the majors. And he didn't really steal a ton in the minors this year either. I know he had like 47 last year or whatever it was, but he's only got like 15 combined steals this year. So that's a little discouraging.
It is a little bit discouraging, but I still believe the speed will come. Or at least the stolen bases will come because the speed is there. I mean, dude is fast. He's going to probably get about a half season's worth of plate appearances at the major league level.
It's going to be more than that. He's pretty much right now. I just looked at his stats before he jumped on the podcast. He's pretty much played a full half season here.
He's
on pace for like, if you projected this out, he'd have like 90 runs, 14 homers, 14 steals, and like a .285 average or whatever it is. So solid numbers. And, you got to think the speed will play more next year. So I'm pretty encouraged with Anderson. Although, the walks are just driving me insane.
Is my big fear because, I mean, you got to think that Robin Ventura's not back. And so typically when managers get fired, the organization will go in the opposite direction of the kind of manager they've had before.
Bring Ozzie back.
Yeah. So
I'm not even kidding, by the way.
I think they'll go into a more forward thinking manager, or at least you would hope they would.
God, please.
And that may end up putting him towards like the 7-8 hole.
Yeah, that's certainly on the table. I just don't think it's going to happen. I just think that he's so much a part of their future, and he's had a pretty damn good first half here, other than the walks and strikeouts. And I know, like,
BABIP is so high with Anderson.
It's always going to be high.
It's always going to be high, but is it always going to be 380 high?
I hope so. It's going to need to be.
I mean, it has been for the last you know, 2.5 seasons in the minor leagues on top
He's
of the
He's a really strange player.
He really is. You'd love to see him take some more walks. You really just would. But to answer your question, I think I take Forsythe. I think the floor is so much safer with Forsythe I think, like I said, it's a team construct too. I mean, if you're looking for upside, if you're looking for speed at the end of your draft next season, you got to go with Anderson. But if you're looking for a guy who's going to produce, and Forsythe is like the perfect guy for me in an AL only, where you need the at bats, you need the plate appearances, and you need production. I think I'd rather have Forsythe in the majority of those kind of leagues.
I just need Anderson to be really good, because he's like the only at bat that the White Sox have every day that I like look forward to watching. It's just so brutal to watch that lineup.
I think too, though, with Anderson, I think his name value as a top tier prospect is going to overinflate his value next year. So while I say I would, you know, it's close and I would lean towards Forsythe, I think the draft day value, what you're going to have to pay on draft day, is going to be so much higher for Anderson than it will be for Forsythe. Because people are going to go, this is a guy who has, you know, 40 stolen base potential that showed pop at the major league level last year, and he's going to be on a bunch of sleeper lists, I bet, and people are going to overinflate his price. And I don't think that will be the same fate for Forsythe. I think Forsythe will be the better value on draft day as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think Anderson's price will inflate all that much, because I think people are going to be disappointed with the steal total right now. And also, I don't think White Sox players ever get overhyped. No one gives a shit about the White Sox, let's be real.
Well, no, I disagree, because, I mean, people are going to project out those home runs and be like, oh, this is a guy who can hit 12 to 13 home runs, and then look at the past stolen base numbers in the minor leagues and go, he can steal 40. And people are going to salivate over that. And they're going to guess, you know, I play in an average league, screw the walk rate, who cares? You know, this is a guy that could go 10, 15, 40 at the major league level. And that's insane, because he won't do that next year.
No. All right, as much as I love the Tim Anderson talk, we should probably move on.
All right, let's move over and finish out with Kyle Hendricks, the aforementioned Kyle Hendricks, who's just put together a magical season for the Cubs. Obviously, I don't want to say that this is necessarily repeatable for him going into next season, but where do you kind of have him ranked for next year, Eli?
Man, obviously he's always been underrated, so... I mean, did you love him last year? Because
I didn't, coming into this year.
That's what I'm... Yeah, like, he's kind of doing what he did. Like, his strikeout rate is less this year than it was last year. His walk rate is worse this year than it was last year. His BABIP is 51 points lower. His BABIP's 245 right now. It was 296 last year.
His left-on-base percentage is just astronomical.
Exactly. 13% up from whatever. Yeah. So, like, you got to see so much regression. Like, this is not to say he's not solid, because last year, when these numbers were more normal, he had value. He had a 3.95 ERA, a pretty good strikeout rate, and a 3.36 FIP. So he was solid, no doubt about that. But this is out of control. I think we're going to see more of a 2015 kind of season from him, maybe a little bit better than that, because obviously I think he has made some strides. But I think we're looking at a pretty big decline from next year. But again, still going to have plenty of value, but just there's no way he can repeat this. Like, everything has gone his way.
Yeah, I mean, all the numbers suggest to me that this is a guy that is much more in line with his FIP. A 3.3 ERA kind of guy, you know, the left on base rate has got to regress. I think the home run to fly ball rate comes up a little bit. His home runs per nine comes up a little bit. You know, the strikeouts took a little bit of dip this year. And if those, you know, if I'm going to say those numbers are the other numbers are going to regress, maybe he, you know, bumps up a little bit. But I mean, I think this is just one of those runs that we saw in a limited sample size with him in 2014. But I got to believe that the really depressed BABIP rates, he's just gotten lucky. I don't think he's going to take a tumble. I think, you know, a 3.3 ERA is still a good guy, but he's not a starting pitcher one for me in 12 or 15 team leagues. I think he's outside my top 15, and he's closer to, you know, the late teens, early 20s for me next season. And I'm not going to be willing to pay the price. Very similar to Jacob Arrieta, who we talked about with, I believe, Jason Collette and Paul Sporer earlier in the offseason, and talked about him as being a regression candidate. And even though he's put up a fantastic season, he has regressed because the numbers were just so amazing last year that it was impossible not to. I think Kyle Hendricks kind of fits that same mold.
Yeah, I'm thinking around pitcher 20, 22, something like that for next year.
And I think that's perfect, a perfect spot for him.
I like how you call him Jacob Arrieta. So we got Jared DeGrom and Jacob. I don't think I've ever heard anyone call him Jacob.
I am just struggling to hold on right now.
well, I'm impressed you made it this far.
Yeah, but that wraps us up. Eli, tell people where you can be reaching, what you're working on.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB, and if you're listening to this, you're probably playing fantasy football also, so make sure you check out me and Justin on the recap episodes after week one, and then you and Mike Werner on the preview episode, so it's a lot of good football stuff coming.
Yeah, a lot of great football stuff coming. Basketball around the corner, too. Hopefully you'll have that set up here in the next week or two. Right now we're winding down for baseball, but as I mentioned on the last podcast, we are not going away in the off season. We will try to do our best to record at minimum once to twice a week through the off season. So all the other podcasts are going dark and recording maybe once a month or something like that, or not at all until January. We're going to be giving you guys regular episodes talking about the kind of things that happened in 2016 and then what to look forward to in 2017. Got a lot of big changes coming. Give us a rate and review on iTunes. That really helps us out, especially if it's of the five-star variety. Check out our sponsor, officialfantasyrings.com. And for 20% off at checkout, use the promo code FWFB and get a customizable ring for your fantasy leagues. If you haven't figured out a prize for your fantasy leagues, or if you are running away with your fantasy league, as I'm sure you are if you've been listening to us all season long, and going, I'm gonna go spend a little bit of that prize money and go get a ring so I can make everybody in my league kiss my ring all throughout the off season and into next year. Definitely use our promo code, like I said, FWFB. Get that discount and get that awesome ring that you can show off all year round. As always, a big thanks to Laura Michaels of the Biletones for letting us use their music as our intro and exit music. Definitely give me a follow on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Email me or the show. I can't remember our email anymore. Friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. As you can tell, I'm just a little bit loopy today, and I apologize for that. But hopefully, I will be back next week a little bit healthier and with the entire crew. Hopefully, Darius makes it back, and we get to hear you again, Eli, because I miss hanging out with you.
I don't see why I won't be here. I'll be here.
All right. For Eli, Chuck, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.